VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Israel said Sunday it is targeting the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah's financial arm with a new wave of strikes in Beirut. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
Speaking in a news briefing, Israeli military spokesman Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari said Israel plans to target Hezbollah financial institutions in Beirut. After days of strikes that have pummeled the Lebanese capital and southern Lebanon, Hagari warned Lebanese citizens to stay clear of Hezbollah's financial institutions as Israel plans to heavily attack them. The scope of the new Israeli evacuation warnings was not immediately clear. Israel's announcement came a day after U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin called civilian casualties in Lebanon far too high and urged Israel to scale back some strikes, especially in and around Beirut. I'm Karen Chamas.
Pro-Russian bloggers say Moscow's forces are fighting street-to-street battles with Ukrainian troops in the outskirts of the eastern Ukrainian town of Selidov as Russia's forces push to gain control over the whole Donbas region. Open source data shows Russian forces, which President Vladimir Putin ordered into Ukraine in February 2022, advanced in September at their fastest rate since March 2022, despite Ukraine taking a part of Russia's Kursk region. The thrust of the Russian advance over recent months has been in eastern Ukraine's Donbas region, over which Putin says he wants to gain full control. In recent weeks, Russia has surrounded towns in Donetsk region and then slowly constricted them until Ukrainian units are forced to withdraw. Bloggers saying they are doing the same to Selidov, which had a pre-war population of over 20,000. This is VOA News. Residents of Iraq's semi-autonomous northern Kurdish region went to the polls in long-awaited parliamentary elections under the shadow of ongoing rivalries, economic instability, and unresolved disputes with Baghdad. The primary competitors in Sunday's vote were two dominant Kurdish parties, the Kurdistan Democratic Party and the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan. The two parties have historically controlled different parts of the region. This division has frequently led to political deadlock. The parliamentary elections were originally set for 2022. They were postponed several times due to disputes over the election law and procedures. Two prominent opposition party officials were gunned down Saturday in Mozambique's capital days before the results of the country's disputed elections are expected. Charles Manguero reports from Maputo.
Eyewitnesses report that gunmen ambushed the car that opposition lawyer Elvino Diaz and party officials Paulo Guambe were traveling in Saturday. Diaz was a legal advisor to Venancio Mondlane and the People Optimistic for the Development of Mozambique or Podemos Party. The killings prompted condemnations in Mozambique and abroad. In a joint statement, the United States Embassy, the Canadian High Commission, the Norwegian Embassy, the Swiss Embassy, and the United Kingdom High Commission expressed their deep condolences to the families of the victims and strongly condemned the murders. Preliminary results from the country's general elections held on October 9 show presidential candidate Daniel Chapo of the ruling Front for the Liberation of Mozambique or Frelimo Party on course to win the vote. Chapo's closest rival, Venancio Mondlane, ran as an independent but was supported by Podemos. Mondlane claims the election was marred by fraud and manipulation by Frelimo. The final election results could be announced Thursday and Chapo is expected to win. Charles Manguiro, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Hurricane Oscar has made landfall in eastern Cuba, an island troubled by a massive power outage. The National Hurricane Center in Miami says the storm center arrived in the Cuban province of Guantanamo near the city of Baraco on Sunday evening. Oscar made landfall on Great Anagua Island in the Bahamas early Sunday. It is expected to produce significant coastal flooding there and in other areas of the southeastern Bahamas. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
massive explosion heard in Beirut.
The army released video of what it said was an attack on Hezbollah's intelligence headquarters in Beirut on Sunday.
The violence mars Mozambique's election returns.
Eyewitnesses report that gunmen ambushed the car that opposition lawyer Elvino Diaz and party officials Paulo Guambe were traveling in Saturday.
And as the candidate's rhetoric gets nastier, is it helpful?
I think it has the potential to be problematic if you go over the line and you discuss people who are kind of in the middle. I think there might be some people that stay home and cross their arms and are just fed up with the entire process.
Today is Monday, October 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Following what authorities say was a Hezbollah drone targeting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's private house, Israel said it struck Hezbollah's intelligence headquarters in Beirut on Sunday. All this amid fading hopes of a truce following the killing of Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar. Sean Hogan of Reuters has the story.
The Israeli military pounded Beirut and Gaza on Sunday after what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said was an assassination attempt by Iran's proxy Hezbollah the day before. The army released video of what it said was an attack on Hezbollah's intelligence headquarters in Beirut on Sunday. Reuters could not verify the date and location of the video released. It comes as Hezbollah also continued to fire rockets into northern Israel through the weekend. On Saturday, an Israeli spokesman said a drone was launched at Netanyahu's holiday home. The Prime Minister was not there at the time, and it was not immediately clear if the home was hit. Netanyahu called it a grave mistake as Israel prepares to retaliate for an Iranian missile barrage earlier this month. There was no immediate comment from Hezbollah. In Gaza, Israeli bombardments killed more than 100 people across the coastal enclave, medics and Hamas media said. Most of the casualties came from strikes on a multi-floor building in the northern town of Beit Lahia. Promises by all sides to keep fighting have chilled hopes that the death of Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar on Wednesday might lead to truces in Gaza and Lebanon. Israel released footage on Saturday said to show the final moments of the Hamas leader before an Israeli tank destroyed the building he was in. Reuters was able to verify the location of the video, but not the date it was shot.
Civilian casualties have been far too high.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said in Italy on Saturday he wants more humanitarian aid going into Gaza as civilians struggle to survive. He also said the United States would like to see Israel scale back some of its strikes in and around Beirut. Although sources say with U.S. elections approaching, Israel is looking to seize the moment and use intensified military operations to ensure its regional rivals cannot regroup before a new president enters the White House in January.
That's Sean Hogan of Reuters reporting for us. And in a related story, former U.S. President Donald Trump said on Sunday that he had a very nice call with Prime Minister Netanyahu, adding that the Israeli leader had asked his opinions on what to do about Iran.
So I had a very nice call with him. He called me up yesterday morning. We talked. I congratulated him on obviously doing a very good job keeping Israel safe. He's doing very well. He calls me on occasion. I think he wants my views on things. He's had very little cooperation from the White House, as you know. They didn't want him to do anything, and they would not be in the good position they're in right now if they listened to the White House, which I guess would be a combination of Kamala and Joe. They're not happy about that either, I will tell you. Israel's not happy about that. But we had a very good talk, lasted for a while. I know him very well. And he'll call me on occasion. I haven't called him, no.
Any Iraqi powder like Iran?
Well, we'll see what happens. He was asking what I thought. And I just said, you do what you have to do. That's all. I said, you do what you have to do.
Changing gears now, we check out the situation in Mozambique, where two prominent opposition party officials were gunned down this past weekend in Mozambique's capital, Maputo. This just days before the results of the country's disputed elections are expected. Charles Manguero reports from Maputo.
Eyewitnesses report that gunmen ambushed the car that opposition lawyer Elvino Diaz and party officials Paulo Guambe were traveling in Saturday. Diaz was a legal advisor to Venancio Mondlane and the people optimistic for the development of Mozambique or Podemos Party. Mozambique Minister of Interior Pascoal Ronda confirmed the murders of both men, adding that police launched a manhunt. The government urges the relevant institutions, particularly the National Criminal Investigation Service and the Police of the Republic of Mozambique, to calmly clarify these cases and ensure that their actors are brought to justice and held responsible for their heinous act. The killings prompted condemnations in Mozambique and abroad. In a joint statement, the United States Embassy, the Canadian High Commission, the Norwegian Embassy, the Swiss Embassy, and the United Kingdom High Commission expressed their deep condolences to the families of the victims and strongly condemned the murders. Anti-corruption advocate and director of the Center for Democracy and Human Rights in Mozambique, Adriano Nuvunga, says the murders are aimed at creating chaos. It is an attack on democracy and an attack on a democratic rule of law and an attack on each and every one of us who believe in the fight for electoral justice in Mozambique. Preliminary results from the country's general elections held on October 9 show presidential candidate Daniel Chapo of the ruling Front for the Liberation of Mozambique or Frelimo Party on course to win the vote. Chapo's closest rival, Venancio Mondlane, ran as an independent but was supported by Podemos. Mondlane claims the election was marred by fraud and manipulation by Frelimo. Diaz was preparing to challenge the results of the Constitutional Council when they were announced this week. Mondlane had called for a national strike on Monday, October 21st, in protest of election rigging. On Saturday in Maputo, Mondlane said the shutdown will go ahead despite the death of Diaz and Guambe. I would first like to declare that we will maintain the strike more than ever for Monday. This is more than clear, but now we will have a different character. We are not going to stay home with our hands folded. For this strike, no one will ask for permission from any municipality and there is no need. Demonstration is a constitutional right and exempt from authorization. No one should authorize us to demonstrate. Therefore, we will maintain the strike in the sense of that there is no work, public or private. The shootings are widely viewed in Mozambique as politically motivated. Police spokesperson Lionel Mushina said the victims were killed after leaving a local bar and added the attack might be related to interactions the men had with other patrons. The final election results could be announced Thursday and Chapo is expected to win. Charles Manguiro, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
U.S. President Joe Biden met with European counterparts on Friday in a brief trip to Germany, where leaders discussed the war in Ukraine and the widening conflict in the Middle East. White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Berlin.
President Joe Biden made a lightning-fast, pomp-filled visit to Germany Friday, making an in-person push for transatlantic unity, scooping up Germany's highest civilian honor for his contribution to transatlantic relations, and thanking Germany for its support of Ukraine as the war with Russia rages on.
We had a very difficult winter. We cannot let up. We must sustain our support. In my view, we must keep going until Ukraine wins a just and durable peace consistent with the UN Charter. Until once again, human dignity prevails.
Support for Ukraine was also a focus of Biden's meetings with leaders of Britain and France, where they discussed a victory plan put forth by Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. John Kirby is White House National Security Communications Advisor.
As we've made clear, we support President Zelensky's plan for a just peace. It's critical that whatever that peace looks like, it has to be acceptable to him and to the Ukrainian people.
And the brutal conflict in Gaza injected itself into Friday's state visit, with news that Israeli forces had killed the leader of Hamas, the U.S.-designated terror group that sparked the war with their stunning attack on Israel last October 7th.
The death of the leader of Hamas represents a moment of justice. He had the blood of Americans and Israelis, Palestinians and Germans and so many others
on his hands. I told the Prime Minister of Israel yesterday, let's also make this moment an opportunity to seek a path to peace, a better future in Gaza without Hamas.
Germany's leader agreed.
Mit dem Tod des Hamas-Anführers Sinwar.
The death of Hamas leader Sinwar, who was responsible for the terrible terror attack, hopefully opens a concrete possibility of a ceasefire in Gaza, a deal to free the hostages of Hamas.
For Germany, this frenzied one-day visit was suffused with meaning and history. And then it was finished in a matter of hours as Biden flew into the German sunset. Anita Powell, VOA News, Berlin.
And here are some more of the stories we're following from around the world. Hurricane Oscar has made landfall in the Bahamas and Cuba, which is already struggling with a massive power outage. The National Hurricane Center in Miami said Oscar is expected to produce a dangerous storm surge that could translate into significant coastal flooding. Forecasters said 5 to 10 inches of rain are expected across eastern Cuba through Tuesday, with some isolated locations getting up to 15 inches. Father Marcelo Perez, a prominent human rights activist in Mexico, was shot to death Sunday in southeastern Chiapas state. Perez was also a leading voice in denouncing the drug trafficking that is rife in the region. John Kinsel Sr., one of the last remaining Navajo code talkers who transmitted messages during World War II based on the tribe's native language, has died. He was 107 years old. The Native American Navajo use a complex yet unwritten language that was essential to the American victory in the Pacific Theater. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish. They've voted in Moldova. That story coming up. But first, our daily check-in with the upcoming American election. Recent comments by former President Donald Trump about the U.S. having, quote, an enemy within that needs to be dealt with have sparked a new wave of criticism by his opponents, as has his increasingly profane language. But the heated rhetoric that both the Republican and Democratic presidential nominees use on the campaign trail comes with a warning from analysts. It may hurt their chances to win the White House. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias explains.
With early voting underway in several states, Vice President and Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris addressed reporters Saturday, intensifying her criticism of her political opponent, former President Donald Trump.
Donald Trump has proven himself to be increasingly unstable and unfit.
Harris has described Trump with those words repeatedly since the Republican presidential nominee made controversial remarks on Fox News on October 13th when interviewed about a potential second term in the White House. Trump was asked how he'd guard against bureaucrats undermining him. He replied, quote, "We have the outside enemy, and then we have the enemy from within." He added, "We have some sick people, radical left lunatics, and it should be very easily handled by, if necessary, by National Guard, or if really necessary, by the military." Trump later clarified he was referring to his Democratic opponents, but repeated similar claims when interviewed on October 16th by the Wall Street Journal. New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, a Republican, was asked on ABC's This Week show to share his opinion on Trump's remarks.
Nobody likes that type of stuff and that type of hyperbole. But let's look, he was president for 4 years. Did he go after his political enemies? I don't think he's going to go and weaponize. He didn't do it the first term. He's not going to necessarily do it this term.
The increasingly heated rhetoric used by both presidential candidates to blast each other isn't necessarily a winning formula to sway votes, political analyst Shannon O'Brien told VOA. O'Brien is an associate professor of instruction in the government department at the University of Texas, Austin. She was interviewed via Zoom.
I think it has the potential to be problematic if you go over the line and you disgust people who are kind of in the middle. I think there might be some people that stay home and cross their arms and are just fed up with the entire process.
O'Brien says there are a few undecided voters at this stage of the race, but the campaigns aren't ready to give up on winning them over. Trump is scheduled to hold campaign events in North Carolina, Georgia, and Nevada this week. Harris, who turned 60 on Sunday, is expected to hold a series of moderated conversations Monday alongside former Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan in a bid to earn the support of swing voters, according to a campaign media advisory. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Moldova voted on Sunday in a presidential election and EU referendum as allegations of Russian election meddling cast a shadow over the former Soviet Republic's attempts to escape Moscow's orbit. Diane Toe of Reuters has that story.
Moldovans cast their ballots on Sunday for their presidential pick and for a say in whether the country should join the European Union. It's a pivotal moment that could bolster the small agricultural economy's drive to join the EU, but allegations of election meddling by Russia have cast a shadow over the vote. As the war in Ukraine rages to the east, the former Soviet Republic has stepped up its push to escape Moscow's orbit and embarked on the long process of EU accession talks. Polls show pro-Western incumbent Maya Sandu has a comfortable lead over her 10 rivals on the ballot, although the race could go to a November 3rd runoff if she fails to reach the 50% threshold to win outright. Sandu urged people to vote as she cast her ballot in the capital, Chișinău. I voted for Moldova to be able to develop in peace and freedom so that Moldova can build the future it wants and deserves, she said. Go out and vote. Every vote counts. Polls show a majority support joining the 27-nation bloc, though five of the candidates are against the referendum, which will decide whether to insert a clause into the constitution that defines EU accession as a goal. They accuse Sandu's government of timing the referendum to boost her election haul. Her main rival, Alexander Stoyanoglu, told reporters after voting on Sunday that he boycotted the EU ballot.
I do not support the position of the current government, which came up with this idea that's not related to the European Union itself. This is a referendum to change the constitution. But at the same time, I'm a supporter of Moldova's European aspirations.
The country's ties with Moscow have worsened since Sandu came to power in December 2020. Her government has condemned Russia's invasion of Ukraine and accused Moscow of plotting her overthrow. Meanwhile, police have said criminal groups and individuals with Russian backing were intent on disrupting the vote. They have reported actions ranging from bribing voters to back Moscow-friendly candidates to taking citizens for training in Russia to stage riots and civil unrest. Russia denies interfering in Moldova's affairs and accuses its government of Russophobia.
Reuters' Diane Toe reporting for us today. Meanwhile, France vows its support for Ukraine's plan to end the Russian invasion. The AP's Charles de Ledesma has that story.
France's Foreign Minister Jean-Noël Barrot has pledged his support for Ukraine's plan for ending the 2.5-year war with Russia, adding he'll work with Ukrainian officials to secure other nations' backing for the proposal. Unveiled by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky earlier this week, the so-called Victory Plan hopes to compel Russia to end its invasion of Ukraine through negotiations. Barrot's visit coincided with a prisoner swap between Russia and Ukraine late Friday night, which saw 190 prisoners of war traded by the two sides under a deal negotiated by the United Arab Emirates. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Italy's controversial plan to curb illegal migration primarily consists of taking migrants away from Italy to Albania. Human rights groups and some analysts say that's illegal. Dale Gavlak reports from Rome that the Italian government is now appealing a court ruling against its flagship project to move migrant facilities offshore.
Italy's right-wing Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, hailed her country's deal signed in November 2023, but enacted this week with neighboring Albania to process migrant asylum claims there as courageous, and remarks this week to Parliament. Under the five-year deal, up to 3,000 migrants rescued by the Italian Coast Guard in international waters each month will be transferred to Albania. An initial screening occurs on the ships before the migrants are sent to Albania for further screening.
Italy has set a good example by signing the Italy-Albania Protocol to process asylum claims on Albanian territory but under Italian and European jurisdiction.
Meloni's government argues that diverting asylum seekers to migrant centers it set up under the agreement in Albania will help fight human trafficking and permit those with genuine right entry to the European Union. A special immigration court in Rome ruled on Friday that it was unlawful for the government to send this first batch of 12 migrants from Egypt and Bangladesh to Albania for processing. The court said they had to be returned to Italy because their countries of origin could not be considered safe if repatriated. Kelly Patello of the European Council on Foreign Relations told VOA there was political dissension over the controversial issue.
So there is different push and pull factor in domestic legislation, and I expect the same will occur also in other countries that will look to implement these agreements. After all the political and financial investment that went into implementing this scheme, the result is that the migrants have been returned. So I have major doubts that the implementation will be successful in any way. All these countries are watching, and so far they cannot see good results.
Patello also referred to Britain backing away from its controversial and expensive plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda as ultimately unworkable. Italy's center-left opposition quickly called for an end to the Albania plan, saying the court ruling proves its illegality. Meloni's government is undaunted, though, and plans to appeal. She called the court decision prejudiced, suggesting she would draft new rules to rectify the issue. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen earlier said the EU could draw lessons from Italy's new migrant processing centers in Albania. Meeting in Brussels Thursday, many EU leaders agreed to enact urgent new stricter laws to curb irregular migration and speed up migrant returns. They fear the extreme right in Europe is using the contentious migrant issue to gain political ground in elections and see outsourcing the problem as one solution. However, activists and analysts question the traditional EU values and the legality of such mechanisms. Elisa Di Pieri of Amnesty International told VOA that the Italy-Albania plan forces refugees and migrants to face longer sea journeys to Albania, where they face potentially prolonged detention and may experience an end to their right to seek asylum.
We are very concerned that the whole system rests on automatic detention from the very beginning. The automatic detention is arbitrary and unlawful under international law. The default position is respect for the right of liberty of the individual, and any exception should be validated by a judge on the basis of an individual assessment.
Davide Colombi, a researcher at the Brussels-based Center for European Policy Studies, speaking to Euronews, pointed to additional legal hurdles.
This is extremely problematic. The right to asylum is a fundamental right that cannot be suspended even in times of politically declared crisis. It is protected under EU law and international law, which shows that this is not a migration issue alone, but it's a broader rule of law issue.
So the question remains about how Italy and the EU's 27 member states will ultimately handle the continent's migration issue. Dale Gavlak, VOA News, Rome.
That'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Steve Karish.